Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of We're Getting a Dog.
Welcome.
We are here doing the last breed of the season for you this week.
It's one more episode next week, a special.
Yes.
It'll be the last final breed.
For this season, at least. Yeah. Before we get in, this is a kind of a long episode, so we're in for a little bit today for this one. But before we get into that, how have you been this week, Dylan?
Oh, I've been pretty good. Compared to you,
I've been sick, so has not been fun.
Yeah,
the
unfortunate.
Yeah, last week it was an allergic reaction, and then right after that, I just got sick. So I've just
sick.
Been at home and to get out of the house. It isn't fun just being at home ill. It's no fun.
Yeah.
So, but I did pull together enough in the past couple days to get this breed put together for you all. So the last breed of season 5, we are going to talk all about the Puli or the Puli.
I'm very interested in what's going to be uncovered here.
Yeah, so
I have no idea why these dogs look the way they do.
Sure. So for those of you who don't know, they're one of the very few breeds that has a corded coat. So this dog breed is best known for its coat being corded, and it's very voluminous. You shouldn't let looks deceive you, though, about the Puli. The Puli's body, though tough and able in strength, they're actually pretty skinny, wiry, and fine-boned, according to the print source for this episode. Mm. They're described as having great sensitivity to humans' moods, feelings, and actively communicating empathy as well. There's a photo here first. It's a few of the colors that the Puli has.
Okay.
Very unique. There's only like I think 3 or 4 dog breeds that have this as their coat.
Yeah, I want to do the Commodore.
The Commodore is the other is
in
another
like season 2, but I think it was too obscure.
I don't remember.
So I don't know. But
we should do the Commodore.
I just wanted to do it because it's the cover of Beck's album Odelay.
Right.
Commodore doing a big jump.
Mm-hmm.
What is the deal with these cords? They look so strange. Kind of cute.
We'll get to those. There's a whole thing about them in this episode.
They
don't
look
worry.
Difficult to pet.
This is a long episode. Dogs. So we're going to start as always.
Kind of like puppets.
Like Muppets or puppets?
Even more like Muppets. Like a Muppet puppet.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to start with what their standard says. So for their body height and weight, for height, males are 17 inches, females 16 inches, and an inch over or under is acceptable according to their standard. Though they are described in some sources as being fine-boned, their standard describes them as being medium-boned. So maybe they need to be a little bit like tougher when they're in the show ring. I don't know. The head of a Puli must be in proportion to the body and must also be medium in size. The muzzle cannot be too long or snipey, and the ears cannot be noticeably alert. Their fur cords must hang over their eyes like an umbrella, and one illustration shows the muzzle is having a rather short but prominent stop. Pulik is plural of Puli. It's not Pulis, it's Pulik. And in Hungarian, it's Puliks, like with an X.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's pronounced that way. I don't know Hungarian. Pulik eyes are almond-shaped and are dark brown with black or slate-gray eye rims. Their eye rims are much more visible with the lighter-colored Pulik. Though this may be tough to distinguish with a Puli who has a fully-grown corded coat, their head is slightly domed at the top.
Well, I wanted to say earlier, you can't see their eyes in these photos. You said, the cords cover it in an umbrella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's their
Why?
Standard.
Why?
That's their
so strange.
Standard, I don't know. The neck must be of medium length and muscular, but not throaty. I'm mentioning the neck because it appears to be a source of contention for some judges, according to a couple of different sources. Some judges prefer the Puli's neck to be a little bit longer to accentuate its lift, but this is not actually noted or supported at all in their breed standard, and is considered to be of a poor judge of cosmetic choice over the actual standard.
As opposed to covering their eyes with their hair. It's the ideal choice.
The rest of their body makes a square shape, according to their standard, and the only other significant note about the body of a Puli is that the top line must lift slightly to highlight the lift of the tail. Their standard is negated if the top line is a flat line to the tail. That was just noted in the book that I saw that I was reading. Okay, now we're on to their coat and color. So, here we go. Okay. Pulik are well known for their dense, weather-resistant corded coat. It takes up to 5 years for the Puli coat to be considered fully grown, as in the cords reach to the ground.
Wow. So the first few years, the coat looks completely different when it's full grown.
Yes, there's a whole set of stages it goes through we'll get to later.
Wow.
They may also be shown brushed out, in America at least, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. The corded coat is obviously preferred, though, when it comes to their showing. The cords can vary greatly in thickness and in shape. Some may develop flat or round, ranging in thickness from tight cords about the size of a pinky to wide cords the size of a thumb.
Okay.
Or so bigger, that's not, sometimes, yeah.
That big of a range, I guess.
Well, for the just the coat texture of the breed, it might be a little... It varies, like, per puppy. They said there's, like, not one corded coat is alike in a Puli litter. When it comes to their coat color, the Puli skin is a bluish-gray color, so that's that. And in some countries, other colors are acceptable, like apricot color in the Finnish standard, or how gray is left out in the Hungarian standard, but included in the Near Exact Fédération Cynologique Internationale standard.
Okay, so what are these coat colors?
I have four that are accepted by the AKC. That is first rusty black, which is sort of like black and tan in a way. It basically, they have, it's mostly black, but their cords fade into like a dark brown.
Okay, I thought I meant the first picture, but.
Oh, the colors in that first picture, that's gray, white, and black.
Right.
So the next one that I have a solo picture of is the black color. And so this is a shortcut Puli as well. I wanted to include one of those. Next is gray. They're allowed in all shades of gray. This is one that's jumping. I just thought that was fun.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is so strange looking.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And then the last color allowed is white for the Puli, which I prefer myself. Or gray. Okay. I like white or gray.
Most like a mop. The white.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Livman mop of dogs. They do have some distinguishing features. Their standard describes them as very loving to those they know, but suspicious of strangers. Giving them some extra time to approach new people is what's most recommended. They're inquisitive by nature, and that will eventually warm them up to new people. Physically speaking, Pulik are fast and able to sharply change directions mid-sprint, making them a great breed for agility competitions. Unfortunately, there is not really any good footage of a Puli in agility contest. So I looked all over YouTube, I Googled. There's a lot of like just really, really poor footage from like the 80s of Pulis competing. And I just didn't want to use it because it's so old. I wanted to find something newer, but I couldn't see anything.
I see.
Finally, we do a video for the next thing, which is their bark. So the Puli has a loud, higher pitched bark that grabs your attention, but does not sound horribly threatening. So this is the Puli's bark.
Daddy?
You know, pretty high pitched alert bark, but
yeah, pretty much
nothing too crazy.
It doesn't sound like they're bracking too aggressively.
No. And in that one, I think they're just trying to get their owner's attention. So, in that video at least. But that is the standard, basically, of the Puli. It's a little confusing because it varies by country a lot for this one. But their history is going to be pretty revealing. So, we'll get to that there in a moment. But okay, what do you think so far?
Well, it doesn't seem that weird. It looks really weird.
Sure.
Still want to know why they have those cords, really.
We'll get to that.
It's a lot of weather-resistant coats.
Yes. And this one's specific to the weather of Hungary, which I think is interesting, but we'll talk about that in a moment with the history. So we're going to take our first break, and then we will be right back.
All right.
All right. We are back with the history of the Puli.
All right.
Now, a lot of people will say they're from Hungary, which is true. That's not false. But
pretty
they
sure you said that.
Also come from Western China, likely near Tibet. Oh. They may also come from modern day Russia and Ukraine. So there's a lot of regions in there that they could come from. Now, there's two theories of the origins of the Puli. And the first one is this. Originally, the ancestral Puli was thought to have come from Sumer via the nomadic Avar people, who were predecessors of the Magyars, which are the indigenous peoples of Hungary.
Well, that's pretty far back, right?
Yes, like the 9th century. Yeah.
Oh, wait. I was thinking of ancient Sumer.
Well, that's like 4500 BC, which is... I'm getting to that. So the theory was supported by uncovered skeletons of dogs near the various moving settlements of the Avars, which looked like the Puli, as well as statuettes dating from Sumerian cultures around 4500 BC that depict dogs that look kind of like the Pulic. However,
do they have the cords?
That's what's kind of like not distinguishable. The Magyars settled in the Danube River region of eastern Hungary. The Avars were familiar with the word Puli as meaning a thing that drives sheep or flocks of animals. For a long time, the history of the Avar and the Magyar people was considered to be the origin of the Puli. Now, the new theory is supported with some better, like, DNA evidence as well. Mm-hmm. So this is the newer legitimized origin theory, and that is from the 10th to the 15th century, that they think the dog really kind of grew into what we know it is now.
In Hungary?
I'm getting there. So, though there was evidence of a Puli-shaped dog in the remnants of the Avar people, there is much more supporting evidence that the Puli came from the Cuman people, who were a Turkic-speaking people hailing from western China near Tibet.
The people who teach kids how to read?
The Cumans?
The Cuman people?
The Cuman people? Is that what they're called?
Cuman is like a child, it's like a learning center, right?
I don't know. I've never heard of that.
No?
No.
Cuman.
I've heard of the Sylvan Learning Center. Anyway, they had their dogs with them. I'm going to probably say Cuman. That sounds more accurate. The Cuman people had their dogs with them, which were said to be closely related to the Tibetan Terrier. So though the Cumans were originally granted refuge in Hungary by King Bela IV in the 1200s, they were inevitably used by the Hungarians to fight the invading Mongols. To add insult to injury, the vengeful King Frederick of Austria and his accompanying troops spread a racist rhetoric against the Cumans to King Bela IV's armies and personnel.
Drama.
This sabotaged his defenses by stirring a shifting mistrust in the Cumans, with the goal of making them their prime focus for attack rather than the Mongols, who were actually attacking them. King Frederick was still bitter that Bela had prevented him from taking the Hungarian throne, which would unite them into a dual empire. And that eventually did happen, and that was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But it just wasn't with King Bela IV and King Frederick of Austria. Just to highlight how conniving King Frederick was, he did all of this sabotaging after being summoned by King Bela IV in a desperate plea for help against the Mongols. So King Frederick was like, oh yeah, I'll bring some people and I'll help you out with the Mongols, but I'm going to like turn all your troops against these people who are helping you. Like, he tried to basically create inner racial tension by spreading a false rhetoric. But King Bela, like, wasn't aware of that. So,
and that was just to start another war?
Basically, it was so that way the Cumans and the Hungarian, like, army forces would not be, what's the word?
Allies. United? Oh, okay.
They wouldn't be allies of each other. He tried to... He used a bunch of, like, racist rhetoric to turn them against the Cumans. And then they started attacking the Cumans rather than the Mongols.
Like, before the war they're preparing for even started.
While the war was going on. The war was happening. They were being invaded by the Mongols during this time. Yeah.
War within a war.
Kind of, yeah. But anyway, what does all this have to do with the dog? Well, while the Cumans and their dogs were fleeing from all of this to southern Hungary, there is some speculation...
Pooling out of there.
There's some speculation that their migration may have created another breed, which is the Bergamasco. I've not heard of that one. Yeah. Over the years, though, the coat of the Chinese Cuman dogs would adapt to, well, Chinese / Cuman dogs, because we think they're from China. They would adapt to the harsher weather of Hungary and become corded as a way of protecting them from the elements. So they evolved from having long, straight coats to having curly coats that would shed and turn into cords. So it would protect their little bodies from the really harsh weather of Hungary.
They just became curly and curlier till they turned into cords
over like hundreds of years. Yeah,
so
just through selective breeding.
So weird.
I don't know, it's put up to evolution in this theory, quite honestly.
To evolution,
or to, like, you know, the dog breed evolving to or adapting to the weather conditions, and also possibly breeding them with other dogs that had curly hair, and, you know, maybe that contributed to it. There's not a lot of records. And that is because the Cumans eventually were allowed to resettle in Hungary during the mid-13th century. However, the population of Hungary in general had weakened after all of these invasions by other countries. It was first the Mongols during the 13th century, then the Turks invaded in the 15th century. So there was also then a cultural rebellion in the 17th century when the Habsburgs took power in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. They didn't think anything from Hungary should be allowed. Like, there were, could be no cultural artifacts of Hungary.
Oh.
So over... like every almost every other century, there was some kind of war, invasion, or cultural rebellion that prevented the bookkeeping and herding and like all of the like any registry of the dog was probably destroyed. Like if there were records of the Puli from then.
It's amazing these like such unique dogs still survived then.
Yeah. And it's crazy.
The coats really did help in the weather.
It's crazy too, because basically anytime they were invaded, the invaders would just take the dogs. They wouldn't kill them. They would utilize them because they were good at herding. So the Puli survived because of, well, I'm sure a few were killed in the invasions.
Because the other corded dog breeds are also Hungarian, right?
Yes, and they're also descendant from the Cuman people. The Commodore is an interpolation of Cuman people.
Ah,
it's in,
right.
It's in their name. So there is probably some relation between those dogs as well. But it's interesting with the Puli because it's kind of one of its own, and we'll get to that also. So all these constant ups and downs meant that any breeding records or standards, if they were ever created, were probably destroyed. And the reason this theory holds up more than any other is thanks to DNA testing. So The Guardian provided a 2020 article where you could see DNA resemblance of the Puli against other dog breeds.
Oh.
The only other breed it claims to have DNA relations with is the Pumi, which is the offshoot of the Puli. That's another dog, Hungarian. It's a little dog breed.
Oh,
but
yeah.
it was created off the Puli. And then the only other breed it shares DNA heritage with is the Pug, which is related to the Tibetan Terrier.
So
it's possible that they are descendant of Chinese dogs.
Right.
But just the way that they're... it could be just the DNA matching now just is closer to pugs than maybe what Tibetan Terriers are today. Maybe pugs are still close to that original DNA. So it's interesting. You know, I think that there is at least some kind of scientific evidence that the Puli originates from China or Indochina, not Sumer, which was modern day Iraq, Persia, you know? Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I think that's really interesting that there's, it's like a, there's lots of speculation. There's lots of evidence now to support that they came from Western China. But at the same time, you know, there was a lot of invading, probably a lot of crossbreeding, probably a lot of change of cultures all the time. Yeah. And then they were suppressed for a while. And then we're going to get to, you know, even more like things that happened to them during the modern era. So now we're into the modern era.
My favorite era.
The later 1800s served the Puli well, as Hungarian breeders made sure to perfect the physique of the dog. The first standard of sorts for the Puli came in the late 19th century, though it seemingly now only survives as a quote in a 1924 book by Puli breeding hero Dr. Emil Reitzes. Hungary wasn't really industrialized until after 1948, so during the first half of the 20th century, the Puli was perfected in its agility and herding skills in the still-then agrarian society of Hungary. It's said that dogs who could not deliver in the field were gotten rid of, and that's a direct quote.
Wow.
And the owner of the puppies may really not have thought anything of it. In those times, the Puli was not a pet. According to multiple sources, the cost of a well-skilled Puli dog was the equivalent of 1 year's salary for a shepherd.
Oh.
That's steep for a dog. It's like you're, that's a big investment. That's like a tractor, essentially, like if you're a farmer, you know. At the turn of the 20th century, Dr. Emil Reitzes began to oversee the organized breeding of the Puli, foreseeing that the industrialization could... At the turn of the 20th century, Dr. Emil Reitzes began to oversee the organized breeding of the Puli, foreseeing that industrialization could spell the end for Hungary's native working dog breeds. He enlisted the help of then-director of the Budapest Zoo, Adolf Lendl. I just liked his last name. At first, I thought it was Lidl, like what Patrick said, like Lidl, and I cracked up. It's Lendl. Anyway, to create a kennel for the breed stock of the Puli. Dr. Reitzes, that's so hard to say. R-A-I-T-S-I-T-S. Reitsitz? I'm going to say Reitsitz.
Reitsitz.
Dr. Reitsitz also wrote the first Puli breed standard in 1915 and updated it in 1924 for its submission to the FCI in Belgium.
Ah, yes. The FCI.
International Federation Cynologique. Cynologique International.
Cynologique.
The European AKC. So
the worldwide.
World AKC. Yeah.
AKC.
Before World War II, there were four classes of Puli: police Puli, working or medium Puli, small Puli, and dwarf or toy Puli.
What does the police Puli do?
They were bigger. They were just bigger.
Okay.
I think they were like a few inches bigger than the regular.
And they herd the criminals?
I don't know what they did. Maybe they just were quick and could catch people. I don't know. Anyway, the Puli rebounded in popularity during the late 1920s and 1930s, and their popularity even spread during this time to the United States. In 1935, the USDA ran several tests to see the skill of the Puli in the field, as opposed to, quote, traditionally used breeds in America, like the German Shepherd, Chow Chow, and Turkish Sheepdog.
Are those the three traditionally used?
I guess.
Well, I mean, German Shepherd, sure.
Yeah.
Went a little random.
Chow Chow, sure.
I mean, more obscure.
Yeah. There was a continuing issue among the traditional breeds being used that they would harm the animals they were supposed to be looking after instead of herding them. So they would, like, attack them and try to eat them.
Harming and herding is the same thing.
No.
Like when you hurt someone.
Herd.
Oh, herding.
A litter of... you knew the difference. Don't fool me.
Just want to help the audience. I'm walking them through.
A litter of four Pulik were born purebred, while others were the result of crossing the Puli parent with any of the three breeds previously stated. So the experiment indicated a couple of things. First, Pulik were, and still are, highly intelligent and skilled with herding. Herding. Not hurting.
I had one that hurt me real bad.
Anyway, according to the herding criteria, Pulik scored an average of 75% to 85% success, whereas the traditional herding breeds used in America scored a shocking 12 to 14%.
That's so much worse.
This leads to the second point. Such a low score revealed that improvements probably needed to be made to the breed stock in America for the dogs being used for herding. However,
sounds
these
like
experiments
need to be made to this test.
The experience. Okay, well, here's the kicker. This experiment was deemed inconclusive because they couldn't run more tests because the United States entered World War II. So they only ran maybe like a handful of these tests, and they were going to start expanding more, but then World War II started for us. So the whole experiment was deemed like, yeah, it's kind of a wash.
Guess I don't know about American herding.
The four Pulik purebreds were auctioned off, and they were the official start of Puli lines in America.
Right, wow.
So the Puli was accepted by the AKC the following year in 1936, with one of the USDA's dogs being the first registered of the breed. So that brings us to World War II, which is just our favorite topic on We're Getting a Dog. The Second World War, of course, had devastating effects on the Puli. Hungary itself was left reeling from the war, and it said that the losses of Pulik may have reached into the thousands. It's speculated that because the breed was so popular there, the sheer number of them alone was what kept them from going extinct.
Wow.
Because remember, Hungary wasn't industrialized yet. It was still agrarian.
Ah.
So there were tons of Pulik used for herding over the entire country. In 1959, it was decided that an updated standard was to be made. This one eliminated the toy and police-sized versions of the breed, and all sizes were to be shown together. By the 1960s, the number of Pulik in Europe had reached pre-war population. So that's good. They reached their, like, revitalized the breed pretty quick after the war. Finally, that brings us now to the Puli in the United States. So, the breed remained rather rare here until the late 1940s. A woman named Sylvia Owen was very dedicated to wanting to make the Puli get to the top of the list of the AKC.
Okay.
She helped start the Puli Club of America in 1951, and she was their first secretary.
Was she Rastafarian?
No, she bred the
what
first...
What is this obsession?
She bred the first Best in Show Puli.
Based in.
She bred them with brushed out coats.
Oh.
She didn't give them cords. She didn't let them grow their cords. She brushed them out. And they won Best in Show in 1968 with a brushed out coat. However, the AKC quickly added, after this win, the AKC added the Hungarian Kennel Club as a recognized dog registry, and that allowed breeders from Hungary to import their own Puli breeding stock to America. When the Hungarian Pulik showed up, they were way more skilled than the American Pulik. They, like, completely showed up.
At
the
dog
American
shows?
Yeah. At agility shows, at obedience shows.
I figured herding.
But... at herding show, they were better than at everything than the American ones were. And this created, and the American ones were seen as, like, froofed up because they were brushed out. They couldn't do the same job as well as the Hungarian corded ones. Mm. And it started, like, a turf war between the pretty Americanized Puli and the traditional working Hungarian Puli. And that was kind of, like, a result of the best in show and not looking like they were supposed to, essentially. But in the 1970s, newer generations of breeders, one pair in particular from Hungary named Les and Clara Benes, they were to thank for carrying the Hungarian standard over to the American Puli population. So they dispelled the belief that Pulis couldn't be corded without being smelly or dirty. That was a really common preconceived notion of the breed in the 60s, was that if you kept them corded, they would just stink and they would be gross, but it isn't true. You have to, they can be cleaned, like, you know.
I mean, any dog smelly and dirty. Any dog smelly and dirty, you don't clean it.
And they also, well, and like I said, most Pulik shown pre-1970 had brushed out coats. So they were really instrumental in being like, this is how they're supposed to look. And it's like they kept their cords immaculate. So when they would see them at shows, they would investigate cords and they would be like clean and conditioned. And they completely changed the look for the breed in the 70s.
Wow. Yeah. So recent.
Yeah. Over the years, their popularity in America has remained somewhat elusive. In 2022, they were ranked 160th out of 214 most registered breeds in America. So they're not super popular. But at the same time, they're very unique, and they're definitely an eye-catcher, I think, of a breed. But their history is strange. It's very long, you know, and they've basically just been around, you know, in either theory, they were around nomadic peoples the entire time, and they just kind of herded through the east of Europe, essentially.
Yeah, doing a lot of herding breeds recently.
Yeah. It's been, I don't
Puli
know.
Puli sounds like a pretty good one.
Puli, I just think they're really interesting in how they were not taken for granted by any of the invaders. They were like, these are really good working dogs. We should use them too.
Yeah.
At least that's what the research implied. So, well, that's the history of this breed. And that was, I know, is a long one. So,
very cool.
Yeah, it's very storied. Absolutely. But we are going to take our second break and then we'll come back with owning a Puli. We're back with training a Puli.
Can you tame those cords?
Well, it isn't about that so much. Pulik are considered very intelligent and eager to please their owners. Training a puppy to be housebroken, sociable, and obedient is a part of having a dog of any breed. Pulik puppies will most likely not need classes to learn their obedience training, but you must keep it exciting for them or they will lose interest. Hmm. This breed was an esteemed shepherding dog for hundreds of years. They will require adequate amounts of mental stimulation when training and playing. This breed is typically not recommended for first-time dog owners, at least in the sources I saw they were not, as they'll seek out the light of heart and break rules with them to test and reestablish boundaries on their terms.
This guy looks weak.
They're tricky. One source said that owners of a Puli must have a firm but fair hand regarding the establishment of their rules and training. They should be trained in short but productive bursts, not for long periods of time. They will catch on quickly with respectful and rewarding training, and that does not always mean giving them treats if they do something right. They will definitely respond to one-on-one attention from an owner very well as do. They're not very stubborn like that.
Yeah.
They will need at least 30 minutes of vigorous exercise or 1 hour or 2 30-minute walks per day or 1 hour of walking, basically. Though they can get more exercise in the form of active play time, and that's always encouraged. It can take the form of going to dog parks, hiking, as well as specialty training. Pulik excel with specialty training such as agility, herding, search and rescue, and even with work as a registered and certified therapy dog.
Oh, wow.
They are very empathetic, and if they're very social, like really well socialized, do really well around other dogs and people, that's a very good career for them if you want to get your Pulley involved in that. Pulley. Cool. I'm saying it both ways because I don't know.
Pulley.
No, it's probably Pulley. Owning one, common health concerns there are very few with this dog breed, which is great. There's just hip dysplasia, progressive retinal atrophy, and occasional deafness. But other than that, there are no other major health concerns for this dog.
Occasional deafness may occur.
For grooming, there was I wrote a full page of notes in my notebook when I was writing my research for this breed. So it's pretty intense. They're unique, like I said, in that they're one of the very few breeds with a corded coat. Their coat is definitely noted in the show ring, with one source saying the cords must go to the ground. And like I said, that process can take up to 5 years. And that has to be before they start going to confirmation shows.
Yeah, wow.
Though the U.S. is one of the few countries that allows this breed to be shown brushed out, it's rather clear that the corded coat, which is also how they were originally intended to look, is the more preferred choice. In one of the articles I read, the author provided some Pulley coat FAQs and their main takeaways. So, ready?
Yeah.
Number one, the Pulley is not born corded. Two,
what?
Nope. Their undercoat starts to come in at around 9 to 10 months, and it's known as the lumpy mattress stage.
Well, that sounds cute.
Shedding and tangles help to form the cords. So when they shed, it catches in their entangles.
Okay,
that's
so they do naturally form.
Yes, they do. Though the show cut is floor-length cords, most pet owners keep the cords at only a few inches long or don't let them grow out at all and keep them in a constant puppy cut.
Okay.
Which is just like little curls,
that'd
basically.
That'd be a lot easier to deal with, I'm sure.
The author quotes then-president of the Pulley Club of America as saying that, quote, their cords are mop-like and must be dried thoroughly to prevent mildew and rotting.
They are mop-like.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yes.
The dogs themselves are mop-like. They will clean your home, but you must clean them.
No, you have to dry them thoroughly or...
they're picking up all the grime from your floor.
Get mildew in them.
They have to reach the floor. So
the process of bathing, conditioning, and drying a Pulley is best done, or at least most efficiently done, with professional grooming equipment. They are groomed on an as-need basis and must be completely dried on all sides. They have to be bathed, so like washed. Their cords have to be individually conditioned, and like any loose parts have to be like kind of threaded out. Like, and if you have to trim them, because if they do get mildew in them, you have to cut them off.
So is this considerably more difficult than a different dog of its size?
It's recommended that you only have a professional groomer do a Pulley, unless you're trained.
Even just cleaning.
Or like you're showing your dog and you know how to do it. I mean, you can bathe them, but the thing is one owner said that to dry them, she had to have her Pulley lie down on fresh towels for up to 10 hours to completely dry out the cords. Or you can put them in a low velocity, like professional, like grooming cage or drying cage. And it takes
a doggy dryer.
Yes. Well, like the one they can sit in, basically.
Don't mix it up with the regular dryer.
It's like a big kennel that just blows air around, essentially.
But anyway,
it can take 4 to 6 hours in a doggy dryer.
That's still surprisingly long.
10 to 12 hours drying with towels.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's still so long for an electric dryer.
4 to 6 hours, yeah, just 4 to 6 hours standing in a dryer. Yeah, because you have to get them. You have to get them like bone dry, essentially. Otherwise,
I'm wondering if having them brushed out would be better, even.
Or just not
probably easier to,
or not having them grow their cords.
Well, yeah,
just but then that kind of ruins the purpose of the dog to me, because that's what they're that's like what they're known
for. That's their signature, sure.
Yeah. Anyways, so it's a long time. Bathing them, one person said if you bathe them at home, expect to devote like 3 hours to bathing them, because you have to individually wash every cord and then individually condition them.
And then you got to dry them.
And then you got to dry them
the rest of the day.
Yeah. So it's
start at 8 a.m.
Grooming is insane for this dog. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, sounds like it.
if you want to find a Puli.
Well, now I'm just running to get by one.
The Puli Club of America has both breeder and rescue information available to the public. That's www.puliclub.org. P-U-L-I. The cost of a Puli is actually lower than I anticipated it to be. It's between $600 to $800 on average for a Puli dog. I expected this to be in the thousands, especially if at one point they were like a salary's worth of something.
All the cost goes into the grooming.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the... Yeah, wonder. Their life expectancy is 10 to 15 years, so they do have a pretty decent lifespan for a dog. They're not very big. For like a medium-sized dog, that's a pretty good lifespan.
Yeah.
As they get older and then into their golden years, many owners choose to shorten their coat for their comfortability because it's a lot of weight to carry. So as they get weaker, I've definitely seen testimonials where people are like, we cut their cords off or we kept them really short when they got a lot older.
Yeah, I was wondering how they do in like hotter weather.
That's the cords actually protect them from hot weather. It's a very strange like insulation system they have with their undercoat and overcoat. It like aerates them enough.
Weird.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it did mention it protected them from the heat in the summer in Hungary as well as the cold in the winter.
Interesting.
So, and I wonder if maybe the white Pulis did well in the hotter parts of Hungary than...
Oh, yeah. Probably.
You know, the colors, maybe it's something to do that. Maybe that's possible. Last thing is intelligence. They're ranked as one of the above average intelligence dog breeds. Stanley Coren ranks them at number 27 alongside Chesapeake Bay Retrievers and Yorkshire Terriers.
Oh, yeah.
However, you know, they were a historic working breed. So that definitely contributes to their intelligence as far as like, you know.
Yeah, the herding dogs are the smartest.
Oh, yeah, probably. Absolutely. Retrievers, herding, sure. But that is all I have on the Puli. That was, I know, a long episode, y'all. Thank you for sticking by us for that. But I thought they were really interesting once I really got to dig into the history and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, cool to learn more about those cords.
You know, I really would, again, this is a breed I would love to see. I have no desire to own one.
I just want to feel them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I'm sure it just feels like...
How are you
like
supposed to pet them?
Dreadlocks. Well, I'm sure they like to be like, pet. It's like when I asked if the Sholowitz Queenly did like to be pet, because it didn't have any hair. I was like, does it like to be pet, or is it weird for them?
I don't know. I would just imagine the cords would be sensitive in some way.
It sounds like they're really not. It sounds like, you know, the way they form naturally is what's best. And like I said, it's different for each Puli. Some of them are tight and a lot more flexible. Some of them are just like long and thick. So
yeah,
just depends on the dog. But definitely, you know, if you have a Puli and you see there might be something wrong with their coat, always take them to a groomer.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like most Pulis would probably just have a clipped coat anyway and you wouldn't recognize them.
I wonder. Yeah. I think it'd be,
unless
I feel like
show
if you
dogs.
Have a Puli, you'd have to let it grow their cords out at least once just to let them do it. It
takes 5 years to reach the ground though.
That's well, you wouldn't have to let, you didn't have to get them all the way to the ground. You could just maybe get them to a medium length and then cut them short. I don't know. They're a very interesting dog breed, but for me, it was something where I think they were much more interesting to read about than my interest of owning one.
Yeah, definitely. So, just cooler to look at photos of.
Yeah, I'd love to see one do an agility show.
That'd definitely.
That'd be pretty cool. What do you think? Is this a breed you would want to own?
Probably not want to own, just for the grooming difficulties. I mean, suppose you'd get it clipped too, but it's very rare. I don't know how we'd encounter one anyway.
Sure, yeah.
Very cool, though.
Yeah, definitely a really cool breed to close out the season 5 breeds. So.
Yeah, still want to learn more about the Commodore.
Oh, yes.
For what's so big in Corden.
I want to learn more about the Pumi, which is the offshoot of
the little one.
The little one. The little scruffy
that
one.
That one I might want.
All right, well, what's it time for, Dylan?
Well... Do you already know what time it is?
What time is it?
Boop, boop, boop. Dog news.
What's the dog news this week?
Dog news. You mentioned the story to me.
I did.
Y'all may have seen this in your news feeds.
Oh,
but
yeah. I did mention this.
A dog in Tennessee. This is courtesy of KNKX NPR station. Dog in Tennessee broke into a couple's house and snuggled her way into their bed.
Which is probably the cutest thing I've ever heard.
It's a picture of this adorable, kind of pit bull looking dog.
Yeah, it's like
a big terrier, at least.
Like
so
almost
cute.
Like a little, like a light brown, right?
Yeah. And some white in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
So the article says, Julie and Jimmy Johnson, they have three dogs of their own that regularly sleep in their bed in southeast Tennessee. But recently they woke up with a large tan dog sandwiched between them that was not theirs. Here's a quote from Julie. You could see light coming into our curtains in our bedroom, and I feel my husband not just roll over, but kind of startled, like almost a jump roll over, and it woke me up. In a quiet but stern voice, he said, Julie, whose dog is this? Julie was admittedly confused, thinking it was, of course, either Hollis, Jupiter, or Zeppelin, one of their three dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she rolled back over, they found an unknown dog in their bed.
Well, was it at least happy to be there?
Well, Julie said, my husband just went to kind of pull the blankets up a little bit, almost like they were going to protect him. And at that point, the dog got even further up on our pillows and snuggled in and was just 100% content being there. It didn't take much time after that. They realized the strange dog was not a threat. And then, you know, they posted on Facebook and they found the owner surprisingly quickly. And the dog's name was Nala, actually.
Aw.
I walk a dog named Nala. She's a great pit bull.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
So cute. Yeah, just slipped out of her collar and was, like, scared of a thunderstorm that was coming.
Oh, that makes it even cuter.
Yeah.
Just found people who would, like, oh, I just need cuddles. I don't know. I don't like thunder.
All right, here's the direct quote from Nala's owner. Our overly friendly pup, Nala, has hit an all-time record for ignoring personal space and added yet another trick to her long list of Houdini acts. Said Chris Hawkins, one of Nala's owners. Shame on Nala for somehow breaking into a stranger's house and invading their personal space. Thankfully, the couple thought it was hilarious and they aren't even mad about it. Very lucky situation all around.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad if, like, a very nice dog just decided to break into my house and be like, can I just cuddle with you guys? There's a storm.
Yeah, I guess waking up with it would be better than, yeah, just seeing a dog come in.
Just imagine waking up, there's just, like, a dog smiling. It's like, what?
What? The article ends bringing up, yeah, the only mystery that remains is how Nala got in the house without any of the other dogs noticing or barking at all.
Hmm.
Or them noticing her getting in the bed or in the house in any way.
She must really be Houdini-like, like her owner says.
Yeah, the theory is that, yeah, the door was left not entirely closed. And then Nala found the porch light on and just got her way in the house somehow.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, I've known dogs that can open doors.
I know, well, I've known dogs that can crawl, climb over fences.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen that before, and that's kind of scary to watch. Luckily, the fences weren't super high in our neighborhood,
yeah,
so
they never learned how to climb down.
No.
They're just like, I got this from the
like,
top.
Like, yeah.
Or they're just stuck there, yeah.
And then you have a beagle howling into the wind, saying, I am stuck at the top of a fence, and I can't get down.
Oh, yeah.
In Sydney.
So that's the dog news. Just watch for dogs in your bed. But I guess they'll be okay.
That's crazy. I saw that story and I was like, this is the cutest, most hilarious thing, but also kind of crazy. But yeah, I like that story.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, that is it for this week's episode of We're Getting a Dog. We will be back next week with another episode. It's our season finale and it is a special coming to us from Dylan. Otherwise, we just want to say thank you all for listening. Thank you, patrons, for listening to our show and for supporting us. If you want to join our Patreon, that information can be found in the links below, along with photos and videos from this episode. And yeah, we just want
to say everyone,
thank you all so much.
Especially patrons.
Yeah, thanks so much for supporting us, some of you listeners, for five whole seasons now, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, we just recently...
50-something episodes.
We just recently passed 5,000 streams for the whole show, which is huge.
Wow, nice.
Thank you, everyone, again, awesome, for listening. That's it for this episode. Dylan,
right.
Why don't you take us out?
Help out your local shelters any way you can, whether that's donating, volunteering, fostering, or adopting, and help control the local pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered. Okay?
You do that. Yeah. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you all.
Wesley Van Hoosen and Dylan Naylor are not pet professionals. Any advice regarding pet ownership and the responsibilities thereof taken from this program should be checked with your veterinarian. All episodes are researched thoroughly, fact-checked, and additionally researched during post-production. Annotated bibliographies of every episode can be found at weregettingadog.com/bibliographies. This podcast is hosted by Dylan Naylor and Wesley Van Hoosen. If you'd like to reach out or submit a photo of your dog to be featured on our social media, please contact us at WGAD@ArcadiaPodcastNetwork.com or on our Instagram at We're Getting a Dog. Thank you for listening to We're Getting a Dog from the Arcadia Podcast Network. Hello, listeners. Wesley here to talk to you a little bit about how you can support this show. For each episode of all of our podcasts here at Arcadia, we spend our own money on books, articles, and other materials so that we can bring you podcasts that are thoroughly researched and fact-checked. All of the hosts and producers of these shows also work full-time jobs in addition to the podcast so that we can support this passion we all share. If you'd like to support us at We're Getting a Dog, as well as the other podcasts in the Arcadia Podcast Network, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/weregettingadog or our website, weregettingadog.com/support. For as low as $2 per month, you can get access a day early to every new episode of We're Getting a Dog and other Arcadia Podcast Network shows, such as Coffee's On and Good Food for Bad Friends. And at higher levels, you can get one-of-a-kind swag. Thank you for supporting the Arcadia Podcast Network and for listening to this podcast. Now back to the show.